We'll have a terrific Tuesday.
This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. One of the suspects in the stabbing deaths of 10 people in the Canadian province of Saskatchewan has been found dead, and his injuries are not self-inflicted, according to police Monday, as they continue the search for a second suspect. Regina Police Chief Evan Bray said 31-year-old Damian Sanderson was found dead near the stabbing sites, and they believe his brother, 30-year-old Miles Sanderson, is injured on the run and likely in the provincial capital, Regina. It was the first time police have identified the two as brothers. Asked if Miles Sanderson was responsible for his brother's death, Blackmore said police are investigating that as a possibility, but can't say that definitively at the point in time. The discovery of the body came on the second day of a massive manhunt for the pair, who are suspected of carrying out a series of stabbings in an indigenous community in a nearby town, which also left 18 people injured. It was one of the deadliest attacks in the nation's history. Liz Truss is set to take office on Tuesday as Britain's new prime minister to steer the country through an acute cost-of-living crisis. Her selection was announced Monday after a leadership election by the Conservative Party. The current foreign secretary beat Rishi Sunak, the government's former treasury chief. If the vote among the party's dues-paying members, Truss faces immediate pressure to deliver on her promise to tackle the economic crisis walloping the UK. She said after her election that she would deliver on dealing with not just people's energy bills, but also long-term supply issues. Queen Elizabeth II is scheduled to formally name Truss as prime minister in a ceremony at the Queen's Balmoral Estate in Scotland. Again, Liz Truss is set to take office this Tuesday as Britain's new prime minister. This is VOA News. A body has been found in Memphis, Tennessee, but police have not linked it to a high-profile kidnapping investigation. Details from AP correspondent Mike Rossia.
Body had been found in a Memphis neighborhood, but the identity of that person and cause of death were unconfirmed. The tweet made no reference to 38-year-old Eliza Fletcher, whose kidnapping early Friday morning.
Video. Saturday, U.S. Marshals arrested 38-year-old Cleotha Abston and charged him with Fletcher's kidnapping. Police detected Abston's DNA on a pair of sandals found near where Fletcher was last seen, and police believe a vehicle belonging to someone at a residence where Abston was staying was used in the kidnapping. Monday, the Commercial Appeal reported Abston spent 20 years in prison for a previous kidnapping. I'm Mike Rossia.
The most powerful typhoon to hit South Korea in years has dumped 3 feet of rain, destroyed roads, and felled power lines in its southern regions. Around 20,000 homes were without electricity as thousands of people fled to safer ground. The typhoon grazed the resort island of Jeju and made landfall near Busan and was moving northeast toward the sea with winds up to 89 miles per hour on Tuesday. It has been on track to move closer to eastern China later in the week. South Korean officials put the nation on alert about flooding and landslides. Firefighters were fighting blazes at a major steel plant, but it was not immediately clear whether they were caused by that storm. Europe's largest nuclear plant has been knocked off Ukraine's electricity grid after its last transmission line was disconnected as a result of a fire caused by shelling. The International Atomic Energy Agency said it was informed Monday by Ukrainian authorities that the reserve line was deliberately disconnected in order to extinguish a fire. The line is to be reconnected once the fire is extinguished. And the Israeli military has announced the long-awaited results of its investigation into the deadly shooting of Al Jazeera journalist Shireen Abu Akleh. It says there was a high probability an Israeli soldier had mistakenly killed her during a raid in the occupied West Bank last May. Monday's announcement was the closest that Israel has come to accepting responsibility for the shooting. But in a report that seemed to raise as many questions as it sought to answer, the military revealed little new evidence to back its claim that the Palestinian-American journalist had been killed in a crossfire of a battle between Israeli troops and Palestinian gunmen. But Palestinian officials say an Abu Akleh's family accused the army of evading responsibility. Recapping one of our top stories, one of the suspects in the stabbing deaths of 10 people in the Canadian province of Saskatchewan has been found dead. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Today is Tuesday, September 6th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, concerns as Europe's largest nuclear plant in Ukraine goes offline following a fire allegedly caused by Russia's shelling.
Footage from September 2 and 3 shows that Russian forces firing MLRS rounds from positions on the ground of the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant within 1 kilometer of a nuclear reactor.
The United Nations warns of imminent famine in Somalia as drought and conflict takes its toll on the population.
I've been shocked to my core these past few days by the level of pain and suffering we see so many Somalis enduring. Famine is at the door, and today we are receiving a final warning.
An incoming British Prime Minister promises tax cuts and action to tackle energy and cost of living crisis. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Europe's largest nuclear plant has been knocked offline as Ukraine's electricity grid, this after its last transmission line was disconnected as a result of a fire allegedly caused by Russian shelling. The International Atomic Energy Agency said it was informed Monday by Ukrainian authorities that the reserve line was deliberately disconnected in order to extinguish a fire. The incident fueled fears of a potential nuclear disaster at Zaporizhzhia, which is one of the 10 biggest nuclear plants in the world. The event comes as more of the IAEA's inspectors led the power plant. According to Russian and Ukrainian authorities, two members of the team are remaining on site. The IAEA is scheduled to brief the United Nations Security Council on Tuesday about their findings. Anna Chanikova joins Flashpoint Ukraine's Steve Miller to discuss the latest.
For the moment, the Ukrainian energy system do not receive any energy from the plant. Also, the Energoatom emphasized that during the last 3 days, Russian forces have continued intensive shelling, and this was also confirmed by the Institute for the Study of War. In their latest report, they mentioned that geolocated footage from September 2 and 3 shows that Russian forces firing MLRS rounds from positions on the ground of the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant within 1 kilometer of a nuclear reactor. And they say that latest footage of Russian forces operating MLRS systems at this power plant reaffirms their prior assessment that Russian forces have militarized the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant.
Now, in addition to the fighting that's taking place around Zaporizhzhia, there's also the counteroffensive that was launched by Ukraine in the southern area. What more have we learned about the Ukrainian forces that are seeking to retake territory that's previously been occupied by Russian forces?
Ukrainian officials, military officials reported, confirmed a certain success by the Ukrainian forces over the weekend. We know that the Ukrainians continue to destroy Russian supply routes, ammunition depot, and military equipment. Mainly, they are successful with the use of HIMARS and aviation. We know also that over the weekend, more than 700 Russian soldiers were killed. This is according to the report by the General Staff of Ukraine. Also, Ukrainian officials, as well as a report by the Institute for the Study of War, confirm the following information, that actually Ukrainian counteroffensive actions are making verifiable progress in the south and in the east. And if we talk about the south of the Kherson region, also Ukrainian military announced yesterday that the village of Vysokopilla was liberated and Ukrainian flag is now back to this region. Today we had footages from this village and we saw people who actually were welcoming Ukrainian soldiers, and basically we can see Ukrainian army inside of the village. Also, if we talk about Kherson region, it was reported by the so-called head of Kherson region appointed by the Russian forces, who is now responsible for all Russian activities on the ground in Kherson region. He announced that the so-called referendum will be put on hold. So Russian forces took a break basically from preparation to hold the referendum on accession of the Kherson region to Russia. And Kirill Stremousov, who is this so-called head of Kherson region by the Russian forces, said that this is due to the counter-offensive actions by the Ukrainian armed forces. And again, Institute for the Study of War in their report also mentioned this and also confirms this information.
That's reporter Anna Chernikova speaking with Flashpoint Ukraine Steve Miller from Kyiv. Incoming British Prime Minister Liz Truss vowed to press ahead with promised tax cuts and action to tackle a deepening economic and energy and cost of living crisis. After weeks of an often bad-tempered and divisive leadership contest, Truss, currently the foreign minister, beat former finance minister Rishi Sunak in a vote of Conservative Party members, winning by 81,326 votes to 60,399. Truss takes over as the country faces a crunch of household finances, industrial unrest, a recession, and war in Europe.
The total number of valid votes given to each candidate was as follows. Rishi Sunak, 60,399. Liz Truss, 81,326. Therefore, I give notice that Liz Truss is elected as the leader of the Conservative and Unionist Party. We'll come up on stage.
Well, thank you, Sir Graham. It's an honour to be elected as leader of the Conservative and Unionist Party. I'd like to thank the 1922 Committee, the party chairman, and the Conservative Party for organising one of the longest job interviews in history. Thank you very much. I'd like to pay tribute to my fellow candidates, particularly Rishi Sunak. It's been a hard-fought campaign. I think we have shown the depth and breadth of talent in our Conservative Party. I will deliver a bold plan to cut taxes and grow our economy. I will deliver on the energy crisis, dealing with people's energy bills, but also dealing with the long-term issues we have on energy supply.
That's incoming British Prime Minister Liz Truss. Scottish First Minister Nicola Sturgeon challenged Liz Truss to act immediately on the cost of living crisis as she spoke to the media on Monday following the announcement that Truss would take over as the next Prime Minister of the UK.
Well, I genuinely wish Liz Truss all the best. I congratulate her on her appointment as Prime Minister. I know how tough leadership is in the best of times, and we don't live in the best of times. The UK is in probably the worst and most acute crisis of our lifetime. So the responsibility on her, because she holds the powers and the resources needed to respond to this crisis, is huge. I will do my very best, despite our big political differences, to build a constructive working relationship with her. I've sought to do that with her three predecessors as Prime Minister. But she must act now, not in the next few weeks, but literally in the coming hours and days, to freeze energy prices for people and for businesses, to deliver more cash support to people who are already finding it impossible to pay their bills. And of course, the last point I would make here is that Liz Truss just becomes the latest Tory Prime Minister that people in Scotland haven't voted for. And had people in Scotland been given the opportunity over the last few weeks, they would not have voted for Liz Truss. And there is the democratic deficit laid bare again. It is long past the time that we should stop having to put up with Tory Prime Ministers and Tory governments that Scotland doesn't vote for imposing policies on us like Brexit and a whole host of other things that we don't support, and taking Scotland in the wrong direction. At the heart of the case for independence is democracy and the need for Scotland to get the governments we vote for and not have to put up with those that we don't.
That's Scottish First Minister Nicola Sturgeon. The United Nations Humanitarian Chief says there are concrete indications that famine will hit parts of Somalia between October and December. David Doyle of Reuters has more.
There are concrete indications that famine will occur in parts of Somalia between October and December, the UN's Humanitarian Chief said on Monday. Martin Griffiths made the warning in the capital Mogadishu against a backdrop of worsening drought and global food prices hovering at near record highs.
I've been shocked to my core these past few days by the level of pain and suffering we see so many Somalis enduring. Famine is at the door, and today we are receiving a final warning.
The Horn of Africa is experiencing its worst drought in 40 years. Experts say the region is on track for its fifth consecutive failed rainy season. Griffiths said the current situations and trends resembled those when famine hit Somalia a decade ago.
Except now they're worse. The unprecedented failure of four consecutive rainy seasons, decades of conflict, mass displacement, severe economic issues are pushing many people to that, the brink of famine.
More than 250,000 people died in the 2010 to 2012 famine, and half of them were children.
That's David Doyle of Reuters. President-elect William Ruto said he will work to deliver for all Kenyans, speaking after the country's Supreme Court upheld his recent election win. The court unanimously dismissed claims by petitioners, including runner-up and former Prime Minister Raila Odinga, that the vote was rigged. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
President-elect William Ruto welcomed Monday's decision, pledging to serve the Kenyan people.
And we are truly, truly grateful. And I want to say to the people of Kenya and to those who have made effort to get us here that we will not let you down. We will work hard and we will not let you down.
The 7-judge court ruled that results of the August 9th presidential election were valid under the Constitution and electoral law. The judges also said they found no significant irregularities or illegalities. Chief Justice Martha Koome read the ruling on behalf of the other 6 judges. She dismissed 8 petitions challenging the outcome, including the one from former Prime Minister Raila Odinga.
The presidential election petition number E-005 of 2022, as consolidated with the presidential election petition numbers E-001, 2, 3, 4, 7, and 8 of 2022 are hereby dismissed. As a consequence, we declare the election of the first respondent as president-elect to be valid under Article 143 of the Constitution.
The court found that the Electoral Commission deployed technology that correctly identified voters, transmitted results, and was not disrupted. The court also said the polling station results were not tampered with and found that Ruto attained more than 50% of the vote, the standard required for the leading candidate to avoid a runoff. Koome said there were some problems with the election, but none that would call for the election to be invalidated.
Although the petitioners have provided numerous averments pointing to possible irregularities and illegalities marked by failure of technology, arranged voter suppression, printing and utilization of Book 2 of 2, EO preparation by the IBC and its chairperson, commission indiscretions, transposition anomalies, agent absence, and many others, we are of the view that the pointed irregularities and irregularities were not of such magnitude as to affect the final result of the presidential election.
The IEBC is the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission. Odinga said in a statement that he will respect the court's ruling. He said, quoting here, "We have always stood for the rule of law and the Constitution. In this regard, we respect the opinion of the court, although we vehemently disagree with their decision today."
The rule of law should prevail. The court normally has the last word in making a statement as to what is the law of the land. But as citizens who are sovereign, we're entitled to disagree, and disagree very vehemently.
In other news, President Joe Biden championed unions on Monday in a Labor Day visit to Wisconsin as he tries to ensure Democrats beat the odds and maintain control of the U.S. Congress in November 9 midterm elections. Biden addressed union workers at the Labor First event in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and was scheduled to address members of the United Steelworkers of America in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It will be his third visit in a week to Pennsylvania. This stop will provide Biden with a chance to hone his message on organized labor and urge workers to stay loyal to the Democratic Party in the 2 states which have critical midterm races. Biden was briefly heckled during his speech in Milwaukee, to which he responded, quote, "Let him go. Everybody is entitled to be an idiot," unquote. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voaafricanews.com and check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programming, Counter, Press Conference USA, and Issues on the News on voanews.com. Remember to connect with us on social media We're on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinua Adofo in Washington. Environmentalists in India have long campaigned to preserve forests as the country's megacities push into green spaces on their outskirts. In one such forest in Haryana state, near the capital New Delhi, environmentalists are teaching a younger generation why conservation is crucial in a country battling to save its green cover. Anjana Patricia in New Delhi has the report.
Every Sunday morning, school children from nearby villages and city schools come to the Mangar Bani forest in India's Haryana state to spot butterflies and birds, learn about trees and conservation techniques. Saving this 270-hectare forest on the edge of a booming business hub near New Delhi has not been easy. It was only after locals-led campaigns and court battles that 5 years ago the government prohibited construction in the forest being eyed by real estate developers. For generations, villagers have considered Mangar a sacred grove. No one can cut trees. But when the spotlight turned on it, this resident understood that the forest also serves a vital function in the ecosystem. Now, he is teaching a younger generation why forests should be defended. For children living in and around one of the world's most polluted cities, that concept is easy to grasp. Mangar Bani has become a symbol of the battle between urbanization and conservation. Environmentalists say forests like this need urgent protection. Students have mastered simple techniques of conservation. Others are learning to appreciate nature. The environmental consciousness these students develop will serve a long-term purpose. That may be crucial. There are concerns that the area has not yet been declared a protected forest, a step aimed at ensuring that it will not be encroached upon. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Thank you, Anjana. South Korea raised its typhoon alert to its highest level on Monday. The move comes as approaching Typhoon Hinamna forced flight cancellations and suspension of some business operations and closure of schools. Ed Buran of Reuters reports.
Strong winds and high waves pounded the port on South Korea's Jeju Island on Monday as the country raised its typhoon alert to its highest with the nearing of Typhoon Hinamna, the first time in 5 years. Traveling northward at a speed of 15 miles per hour, Hinamna is expected to make landfall southwest of the port city of Busan early on Tuesday. President Yoon Suk-yeol said he would be on emergency standby a day after ordering authorities to do their best to minimize damage from the typhoon. It's the second bout of heavy rains the country is facing since deadly floods in August. Bang Chung-il owns a laundry shop in Seoul.
We prepared water stoppers and sandbags. So, if it rains a lot, then we will act promptly, as we want to avoid damage, unlike last time. We don't want more damage. We suffered so much last time.
South Korea classifies typhoons in four categories: normal, strong, very strong, and super strong. Very strong typhoons, like Hinamna, have wind speeds of up to 53 meters per second. That's 118 miles per hour. No casualties have yet been reported, though more than 100 people have been evacuated and some facilities have been damaged by floods. Authorities say the typhoon is on a course that will take it northeast toward Japan. The south of the country was already being pounded with heavy rain and strong winds on Monday.
That's Ed Baran of Reuters.
Hey there, it's Shauna Renee, also known as the Lady DJ, inviting you to join me every Thursday at 10 and 2200 UTC for today's Hit Countdown. Each week I count down the top 20 songs in pop music according to Billboard and Rolling Stone magazines, but more importantly, according to you, the VOA listeners. Again, that's Thursdays at 10 and 2200 UTC right here on VOA 1.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews. Ooh. Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world. Ah. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA, and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinua Ofor in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The State Department has barred Paraguay and Vice President Hugo Velasquez from entering the United States due to his involvement in significant corruption, including bribery of a public official and interference in public processes, said Secretary of State Antony Blinken. Vice President Velasquez announced his resignation from office and will no longer run for president in the next election. The United States also designated Yacyretá Binational Entity Legal Counsel Juan Carlos Charlie Duarte for involvement in significant corruption. Duarte, a close personal and professional associate of Vice President Velasquez, offered a bribe to a Paraguayan public official in order to obstruct an investigation that threatened the vice president and his financial interests, explained Secretary Blinken in a statement. Corrupt acts such as these also contribute to diminished confidence in the government and public perceptions of corruption and impunity within the office of the Paraguayan vice president, he added. Moreover, Duarte's act of corruption abused and exploited his privileged public position within the Yacyretá binational entity, risking public confidence in one of Paraguay's most vital economic assets. Duarte has since been removed from his post at Yacyretá, said Paraguayan President Mario Abdo Benitez. The U.S. Department of State also designated Velasquez's immediate family members as ineligible to enter the United States, including Lourdes Maria Andrea Samaniego Gonzalez, Dionisio Adalberto Velasquez Jimenez, Sonia Rebecca Velasquez Esquariza, and Hugo José Velasquez Esquariza, and Duarte's immediate family members, including Ninfa Concepcion Vera Morera and Tamara Duarte Martinez. These designations reaffirm the commitment of the United States to combat corruption, which harms the public interest, hampers countries' economic prosperity, and curtails the ability of governments to respond effectively to the needs of their people. The United States continues to stand with all Paraguayans in support of democracy and the rule of law, and will continue to promote accountability for those who abuse public power for personal gain, regardless of their position or political affiliation.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.